Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, honourable members. Particular good morning to Mr. Schaefer. Special word of welcome to Justice Mlambo and Team Legal Aid South Africa. You must welcome here, all of you, and we're looking forward to your presentation this morning. Yes, we are. Just very briefly before I ask the CEO to take us through their presentation, honourable members, we have four bills, and I want you to address me on this. Excuse me. It's the Prevention and Combating of Trafficking Persons Bill, Criminal Procedure Amendment Bill, Section 49, the Sheriff's Amendment Bill, and the recently tabled Judicial Matters Amendment Bill. Would you agree with me if I said that there should be no reason why we shouldn't proceed to finalize processing those four bills? And if you agree with me, then can we ask Mr. Romano then to look carefully at the program and see where we can find space and time so that we can dispense of those bills so that they are dealt with in parliaments or the National Assembly's plenaries before we rise in June. The reason I'm saying this is because we're about to be swamped insofar as legislation is concerned. Some would say that we are swamped, and you would be correct. So that being the case, then, can you please address me on that? Mr. Jeffrey, followed by Debbie Schaefer, followed by Dean Smuts, and then Prof. Ndamendal.
Chair, no, I agree. We need to I think, well, definitely with the trafficking and the Criminal Procedure Amendment Bill, I see no reason why we can't finalize them and have them in plenary. And trafficking becomes more urgent by the day. My fear with this sort of recent Ethiopian case of these Ethiopian men is that labor trafficking is an area where there's a big gap in our law. But just whilst one's in the presence of luckily he's no longer a SCA judge anymore, but we never know, maybe this matter may go to the Gauteng High Court, to say that with the Sheriff's Amendment and the Judicial Matters, we still have to have public hearings. I think it is anticipated that there won't be any controversy over them, but we can't preempt the hearings, so it can be rather say with those bills that we will, assuming that there's no big issues raised in hearings, we will aim to finish them, but we don't want to give the impression that we're not going to listen to what is said in the hearings.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would like to ask if you prioritize trafficking as a number one bill. It's our longest outstanding one anyway, and I think
PPI
is not even on the agenda at the moment. So if we can prioritize trafficking first, we can get that done, and agree with penalties be predicted, Mr. Chair. Okay. I think we should get that one done first, especially in the light of Ethiopians. I agree with it, and it's really been long outstanding, and we need some urgent action on that one. But I think otherwise I agree with Mr. Jeffrey unusually.
Chair, I would simply say that the list is possibly too short in view of our workload, and I rather thought we had the other day talk about a list of final six. The PPI should be added to this list. We must conclude it. It's not an easy bill. It's difficult, but we must conclude it. And there was surely a sixth the last time we spoke about this. in that I can't recall what it was. Yes. Because it was our thinking that we should try to conclude all of those before we rise and do the 17th superior as soon as we come back. But as soon as we come back.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Without giving my suggestions for many words, I would like to say we're in full support, Chair, of your suggestion, for some of these things may become long-winded now and long overdue. So we support the suggestion.
The fifth bill was the PPI, but there are some outstanding matters with the EU regulation. And what I would think it's realistically not, it's not realistic to try and get that in plenary. I think we should, once we finish those four bills, we should have a week at least at the end of the term, and we could then start looking at PPI then. But if Ms. Smuts would read her emails, she may agree with me.
Thank you very much. Then I'm going to ask then Mr. Romano to look at the program and fit us in as far as that's concerned. If we can, if the Human Rights Commission can request a postponement and grant it, then we can postpone someone and slip in legislation. Yes, we can. Well, Human Rights Commission asked for their date. It's tomorrow, but it should have been earlier. All right. CEO, first, Justice Mlambo, please ignore Mr. Jeffrey's comments. He wasn't trying to canvas lobby. It's not allowed in any case. I take it that you want to say a few words before the CEO makes a presentation, but allow me on behalf of the committee to congratulate you on your appointment. I'm speaking for myself when I say this. I believe it is overdue and very, very well deserved. Of course, we're going to miss you. And I get the sense in your presence here that you actually don't want to leave. So I don't know whether it's at all possible to be JAT president of Gauteng High Court and still run Legal Aid South Africa. If it was at all possible, well, don't let us stop you. But I'm saying that in a very light vein. Judge Mlambo, your new appointment is very well deserved. For reasons that we've already expressed in previous meetings on this committee. And with those few words, let me hand over to you, and then if you wish to introduce your team, although we know most of them by now.
Thank you very much, Chair, for those kind words. Good morning to you and the honorable members of the committee. Good morning to you all. Chairperson, thank you very much for those remarks about the South and North Gauteng High Court situation. I'll accept them, thank you very much, but I know that the rest citizens here has to sign. So, thank you very much. Chair, my team that accompanies me today, briefly running through them, at right at the extreme left is Mr. Elroy McCallum. He's the Justice Centre of the Malmesbury Justice Centre here in the Western Cape. Next to me is Ms. Vidhu Vedelanger, who needs no introduction. She's the Chief Executive Officer of Legal Aid South Africa. Next to me is Ms. Nonim Gaza, your first time here? Second time. She's Chairperson of the Audit and Risk Committee of Legal Aid South Africa. I'm happy she decided to come and accompany me. Next to her is Ms. Rebecca Shabatau, Ms. Money Beggs. She's the CFO of Legal Aid South Africa. And next to her is Mr. Brian Naya. He's the National Operations Executive. He's the man in charge of the lawyers in the organization. And next to him is Mr. Jerry Makokwane. He's the Chief Operations Officer of the organization. And behind them, is Mr. Paul Pasha. He is our communications executive. Next to him is Mr. Thembile Mdadi. He's the corporate executive. He's the man who looks at our legal health in terms of those who want to sue us. He protects us. And next to him, I think it's his first time here, is Mr. Hope Ambiso. Hope Ambiso is the regional operations executive of the Eastern Cape. He started his career at Legal Aid South Africa as a candidate attorney, was admitted, became Justice Center executive of the East London Justice Center. He's now regional operations executive of the Eastern Cape. I think I'm mentioning that deliberately, that we, when we say we develop career paths, we have them in the organization. I think that, then there's Ms. Cordelia Robertson. She's hiding. That's what I could see here. She's the head honcho in this province, the regional operations executive. Chair, thank you very much. That's my team. Well, there's Kim, right at the door. She's the communications guru of the province here, and the lady who's looking down with the fancy birds is Nelly Masina. She's the communications guru based in Johannesburg National Office. Chair, with those few words, I'm going to request the CEO to take the committee through the strategic document. As you'll see, we take a five-year approach from 2012 to 2017 in terms of our strategic thinking and alignments. And we've also included our 2012-2013 annual performance plan, as well as our 2012-2013 budget plan. So we'll be talking to those documents. I think the CEO will talk on the strategic plan, and I think Mr. Naya will talk, and Mr. Kokwane will talk on the annual performance plan, if I'm not mistaken, and the CFO will briefly touch on the budget. Before I hand over, I want to say, should this be my last presentation at this meeting for Legal Aid South Africa, I want to say it's been a big learning curve for me. And I've had support from this committee since I started. Mr. Subanyoni reminded me of the battles I came to wage here, even though I faced imminent defeat, about us being allowed to do civil legal aid. I'm happy that this committee has supported me throughout. When I took over as chairperson of Legal Aid South Africa in 2002, I said one of my main objectives is to see the development of legal aid in this continent being developed further, as well as beyond. And we've hosted more than 50 country delegations in this country who've come to Legal Aid South Africa to see. I've been invited in several countries. I've gone as far as Serbia to talk to them, how they can put together things, how can they work together with their government. I've been to a number of other places. But I'm mentioning this to say last week was a very fulfilling experience for me when I went to Vienna to the and the Commission on Crime Prevention and Justice of the United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime to introduce a resolution sponsored by the South African government for the adoption of United Nations principles and guidelines on access to legal aid in criminal justice systems in the world. It's a process that started in 2004 in Lilongwe. I attended that conference and we made a call there that the United Nations should adopt a document that will apply internationally, because none does. We've got a covenant, we've got the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, but they've got very few provisions. We have a lot of other treaties and conventions, but we felt there was a need for a single document that borrows from all of them. So last week, I introduced that resolution. It was adopted by the Crime Commission and it's en route to being tabled and hopefully for adoption by the General Assembly of the United Nations later this year. So it was a very fulfilling experience for me. If I leave Legal Aid, I will leave it having achieved one of my main objections of seeing the common vulnerable man being treated in a human way, not only in this country, but beyond. So, with those few words, Chair, could I hand over to the Chief Executive Officer of South Africa to take the committee through the strategic plan? Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Judge.
Chairperson, thank you. We're also very proud of our Chairperson, and we know we have to now let go of him so that he can do bigger things in this country. But as you said, I think that it's fitting that when we talk about the issues related to our Chairperson and also the point that he just made about the UN principles and guidelines on legal aid in criminal matters, that it is a reflection when we talk strategic planning of how this organization has grown over the past years, and that whereas we were at a stage where government was really seriously pulling its hair out and thinking what we should do, today we can talk about having achieved over the past few years our ability to reach South Africans in terms of criminal matters, increasingly in terms of civil matters, but also that we've been able to make a difference internationally, that many other countries see us as a model. Because in many developing countries, legal aid has worked because of the high budgets. In terms of the developing countries and the level of budgets that we have, we still have a better budget than many other developing countries, but compared to developed countries, it is now that we are a symbol that it can be done and that we can make access to justice work for poor people. And this instrument at an international level that is now going to be placed before the General Assembly, I think, is really telling. And that is where we've been able to proactively influence some of these issues which we think that is important and that we need to continue to do. So in talking about our strategic plan, and to make it a bit interesting for JJ, JJ says it's going to be a boring ride. My apologies. The issue for us in terms of strategic planning, just in terms of some introductory comments, is that for us it's quite an important focus to have our strategy and our vision right, because that sets the path for us and it allows us to work towards achieving that. So these documents are important. I don't think we've really in the past presented our strategic plan to the committee. I think that this is good now that we're able to do this as well as then on our report, because this is what sets it up so that then when you look at it, you can then say, what about these issues, etc. So when we report, we know that we're reporting against something that we talked about in terms of what our plans were. So planning is an important part of it, but key to planning is it's our ability to execute those plans as well as then to monitor and track them so that we can achieve what we need to. And that is what these documents talk to. It talks to how we set up what we want to achieve and then how we want to go about achieving it and then reporting on it. Our past few years have shown that we have done that successfully. And so for us, the issue is really what do we do in this next period. And talking this year, because it's important also in terms of where we are at, because it is the start of our five-year strategic plan period. And when we look at it, we've looked at how we do planning in terms of the different tiers. We realize that we cannot achieve everything overnight. So we've always looked at it in terms of the periods, and that's what the earlier part of this document talks to, that we look at in periods and we then say, well, what is it that we want to, what's the next big shift we want to make in this period, so that when we look back, one can get caught up in the day-to-day delivery of legal aid services, but when we look back, how have we grown our organization? So I think that's also what I want to point to when we talk. In terms of the introductory comments, it's just reiterating what I've just said, that if strategic planning is a key component, that all our documents in our organization are linked. We don't do strategic planning for the sake of it and then file it. We link this plan to our annual performance plan, as you'll see today how we've done it. And then we link that to our performance monitoring system. Every person in legal aid has a performance contract which tied back to these documents, so that in the end we can achieve our objectives that we set out to achieve and we can deliver on our strategies. Although you know that the National Treasury has set up new guidelines, so I just want to assure committee that this strategic plan has been set up in compliance with those guidelines. Before we move on to the strategic plan proper, in terms of the introduction and background, that's slide 6, slide 6. This is just giving you a sense of what we are and who we are and what statute sets us up, etc. And I'm sure all of you are familiar with that, so I don't need to go into the details. The next slide then talks to the process we've gone through in terms of the setting up of our strategic plan. And essentially, in terms of our plan, in terms of the process that we, what we did is we undertook research to inform us in terms of our next five-year plan. And that then helped us to draft a plan which was considered by our board of directors, and that was then consulted on externally and internally. So in period of August to October, we had extensive consultation. In every province we had stakeholder workshops, and at the national level we had a workshop also where we presented our draft plan and we received comments from our stakeholders as well as our staff. We had discussions with our staff and we consulted with the staff as well as the union. And then we, from those comments, we were able to finalize our plan and submit it by January of this year, which was then submitted to the Minister of Justice, and he approved our plan in March. So that was the process. In terms of the methodology, our methodology has been that we have combined a normal draft plan methodology of setting up the vision, mission, outcomes, objectives, linking to strategies and programs to a balanced scorecard methodology. So the next slide talks to the balanced scorecard, which essentially is saying that often in strategic planning, the focus becomes the bottom line, and whereas in the private sector, the bottom line is the profit or increased market share. In the case of the public sector and agencies like ours, that it's important that we get our client focus right, that we deliver on the services that we're supposed to deliver. So what this balanced scorecard approach does is it keeps the four components of an organization in balance. It reminds us that we've got to achieve on each of them and not only on one of them. And so we talk about our customer and client focus as well as our financial sustainability issues. And then we talk about our internal processes, which is internal business processes, as well as setting up our organizational capacity to be able to deliver what we set out to deliver. And that is what those four components talk to. You'll see in our strategic plan that then that four components follows through from the time we set up our strategies through to our program, and then in our annual performance plan, the projects as well. If we move on from the methodology, our legislative and other mandates are spelled up in that section, which is the slide 10, where we talk about the Constitution and what it says in terms of legal representation in sections 35.2 and 35.3, but also what it says about children in 28.1. There's also some broader issue in terms of hearing before an independent, an independent court. They don't use the word court. Impartial, okay. And then in terms of the other laws that impact on us, we've been set up in terms of the Legal Aid Act, which we are in process of revising, because since our new constitution, it hasn't been revised, and we're hoping that it will serve before Parliament this year, as well as other legislation, including the PFMA, which is an all-encompassing governance and finance legislation that affects all of us. Then we also, in terms of the guidelines, have to spell out relevant court rulings which impact on our work, and some of those are spelled out, but the details are given in our strategic plan document, which has been also circulated to you. And some of those include the fact that what is the status of our legal aid guide in which we spell out our policy. And SCA in Legal Aid Board versus Johan Pretorius, which links to the Burmach trial, actually said that judicial officers are not bound by our legal aid guide, which we weren't very happy about, but that was what he said, and therefore they said that the judicial officer, which is the judge, is best placed to determine how his or her trial must be run. And then in terms of the last one, which is Legal Aid Board, the state and others, which is the Porritt and Bennett matter, we had a more positive outcome from the SCA, where the SCA said that the court in looking at Section 3B and basically the affordability of legal aid applicants has to hold an inquiry to satisfy itself as to whether or not those applicants are able to afford. And it's if those applicants do not want to place all the details before the court, then it's up to the court to decide how to work with that, because that means it could work also to their detriment. And that is what happened in this Porritt and Bennett matter. The SCA said we were right in saying that those two applicants actually, in terms of all indications, they didn't want to disclose, but in terms of all other indications that they could afford the cost of their own trial. and so it went back to the trial court, and that is where we then had the opportunity to withdraw from the letter. So that was a positive one. So those are the types of things that impact on our work. Moving on from there, essentially in looking at a strategic plan, we need to understand our context. So we then go into a situational analysis where we look at external and internal factors. At the point at which we set up the plan, we will then review it on an annual basis to see how things are being changed in the environment, which then impacts on our work, so how we need to adjust our programs and projects accordingly. And in terms of this external environment, some of the key issues linked to the levels of poverty in our country, the fact that we are in the middle of a recession, and how that impacts on people and communities, and their need for, amongst other services, legal aid services, the issue of whether our crime stats are increasing or decreasing, the number of matters that are being handled at the court level, whether those are increasing or decreasing, which in terms of what we've seen in terms of numbers, actually the number of criminal matters are decreasing that go to court. And that also could be because of improved screening, etc. And however, when we look at in terms of civil legal aid, the number of unrepresented people in civil matters is still high, and so that remains a gap for us. And in terms of the overall gap between supply and demand of legal aid services will remain, and therefore the need for legal aid will be there. Ultimately, it would be good if we were able to reach a level of justice in our country where people abide by rights, etc., we wouldn't need something like legal aid. But we know that in all countries that it always still exists. It's the extent to which we need to provide it that might change. In terms of the next component, which is our finance and sustainability component, which links to the issue of our funding and our sustainability, essentially we are dependent wholly on government grants, and that it links to our ability to then deliver services, that we are compliant with all our legislation, and we are also working in terms of the best governance practices as well as guidelines, whether it's in terms of King 3 or whether it's in terms of anything else that government sets up. Our board is fully functional, it's effective, it provides leadership. We did an independent evaluation which we shared with you the last time, and it indicated that the board is fulfilling its responsibilities effectively and efficiently. And in fact, they said it compares with the best boards that they've seen, both in the public and private sector. And that in terms of sustainability, it's also about legal aid in terms of us as a brand. And as a brand, we have also been growing our brand and increasing, and that links to the issue of awareness. If people don't know us, they can't access our services, and that is why we make brand a focus. And in terms of raising awareness, we've done a lot of work on that. We don't have enough money to do the advertising, but we have grown our brand, and as is indicated there, it grew 49%. Just to a recent omnibus survey that we do annually, which is done by an external party force, and in fact that 49% has now increased by a further 7% to 56%. So 56% awareness of legal aid amongst the lower LSM groups, the people who would need our services. We think we're making good progress. We have still ways to go, but we think that is good. Moving on from there, the internal environment, as you see, that we've grown our organization to be able to perform and deliver on a mixed model delivery of legal aid, which is essentially that a system through which we deliver legal aid to our justice center, but also through JudiCare, which is outsourced to private practitioners, which is a very small component, 5%. You can see there it says 3%. So it's 5% is made up of JudiCare, then our cooperation partners, that is NGOs and others who do work like ours, as well as agency agreements. The number of cases we've dealt with has increased annually. The number of civil cases has also increased annually. In fact, we just recently, we now are tying up our performance information for the last financial year. And because of our ability to increase capacity in civil matters, we've now increased civil legal aid also in this 2011-12 financial year. So we were very happy with that. And that in terms of criminal court coverage, I've indicated to you previously that we are represented at every court. The extent of representation, which is like in district courts, 80% representation, and in regional courts, it is 100%, sorry, I think this is, 100% representation, which is 5 days a week and 4 days a week. That is there. However, that's where, when we pick up on challenges, it remains a challenge because the extent of representation is still not adequate to allow us to have people who can fill in when somebody is not there, to provide enough support for our practitioners to spend more time in preparing. At the moment, they do have 1 day a week in which they have to consult with their clients and prepare, but we need to improve that. And that also, in terms of our internal capacity, we set up our legal aid advice line, which you also are familiar with, and so we expanded it, and that in terms of our HR and IT platforms, we've grown it over the years. So that is basically the environment within which we start this 2012-17 strategic plan. So that takes us to this next issue of, well, where do we want to get to? And in terms of our vision and our mission, we see our vision as contributing to improved quality and justice in South Africa, and that in terms of our mission, which is focused on the organization, to grow our organization, then be able to provide, as it says, accessible, to be sustainable, ethical, independent, and quality. It's quite a lot of words, but we try to look at each of them and see how best we can achieve those. So that's our vision and our mission for the next 5 years, going up beyond, because those are longer term statements, and that those will then also be achieved through our, not only through our strategies and programs, but how we conduct ourselves, which is our values. So therefore, values is an important component of our strategic plan, and these are the key values to which we subscribe, which is passion for justice, Ubuntu, integrity, accountability, service excellence, and people development. Now, the importance of those is that our work is not just to be there and provide something because we got to get over with. We have to look at why do we exist, and we exist especially to increase access to justice. If we exist to increase access to justice, then our clients and our people are our core, and we have to ensure that the way in which we do our work and what we do focuses on clients and communities as well as our internal resources, our people, because that combination is going to make us successful or not. So that is where the importance is in terms of values. And then we move to the next section, which is the strategic shifts, which in the strategic plan I think is one of the more important components of the document. And this is what talks to what I started off my comment on, and that in our first, in the periods, and you'll see that our strategic plan periods, if we look at them, they were before 1999 what we had, then 2000 to 2002, and then the next 3 years, and we had 3 year plans until this year, we would now have to have a 5 year plan, that we set up at the start of 2000 to turn this organization around. We moved from a model where we were providing services through duty care, through outsourced private practitioners, to a justice center model. We moved to set up our own systems because of that. So we grew from an organization that was small, it had about 300 people maximum across the country, to now today where we have 2,500 people. So that's the shift we had to make. So in the initial period, what we were looking at is how we make that shift in delivery systems. How do we hire the lawyers? How do we set up our offices? How do we make those offices work? How do we set up systems nationally to make this work? Because if you run a national organization, you've got to make sure that you know what's going on in those different offices. At the moment, we have 64 justice centers, 64 satellites, 6 regional offices, a national office. Now, we need to know what's going on there. We can't have things happening, you know, in different ways, and we don't know what our lawyers are doing in one part, and they're doing it differently from the other. They need to follow our policies, they need to follow our procedures. So that first period was spent doing that. The next period, if we move on, 2006-2009, we then could move to consolidating that kind of network, a national footprint, and to see how we can begin to look at issues of efficiency and effectiveness. In the initial period, we're focusing on setting up, rolling out, plus importantly, which I should have mentioned in that initial period, on changing our governance environment. Because we were an organization that didn't work. We didn't even have financial statements at the start of 2000. So we had to change that, and that's what we focused on, compliance. But we didn't then want compliance to dominate us, because compliance has its role. Its role is to ensure that governance is in place and that public monies are spent in a way that is proper, but also that we are accountable both to the parliament, to our minister, but also to the public in South Africa. So that is where that was our focus. But beyond that, we then had to say, well, having set up our national footprint, what is it we had to do? And in that 2006-09 period, we spent time consolidating our systems, looking at what more we could do. Having done that, by 2009-2012, which is the period we just finished, we could then look at, well, now that we've done that, we can't morph the same in each period. We have to grow, we have to see what we do. That we looked at new ways of reaching people. What were the new ways of reaching our clients, that is? How do we do that, and what is it that we can do more within the resources we have? Because it's not as if we were going to get more and more resources. Plus, in terms of criminal legal aid, we had ensured that we had that coverage that we needed to. We can do with more practitioners, but we had a big gap in terms of civil legal aid. As Judge said initially, the committee, in the early 2000s, the committee didn't want us to even look at civil legal aid. It said, get your criminal legal aid sorted. And also, if you can't do that, you shouldn't be looking at other things. And we kept it in parallel, but not to the extent that we're doing it now. Well, in 2009-2012, by the time we're reaching the end of that 2000s, we could now say, yes, we needed to do this. And we can do it because we have addressed criminal legal aid, and we can now do more on civil legal aid. And that's what you see, that shift happening also to civil legal aid. Increasing number of civil legal aid practitioners that we've appointed, and a focus on that, etc. Plus, the issues of quality has remained throughout. One of the things that people assume, because legal aid, then your quality is going to be bad. You know that you go on visits to the prisons or to other places, and people complain about quality, you raise issues with us. We've always said to the committee, raise issues with us, but give us concrete instances so we can respond concretely. We cannot talk about general issues. If we look at the structured interventions we have on quality, we can assure you that even in the private sector, they don't have it, as far as legal quality is concerned. So that is one of the advantages also of an in-house model. Whereas judicare practitioners, we brief them, they do their work, they say we're accountable to the law society, and therefore that is the basis on which they work. In our case, our legal practitioners are accountable to us. We look at their quality, we birth their competencies, not only in terms of what they've learned, but also in terms of training, ongoing training, continuing training, as well as we then look at and monitor quality, and then where people are having a problem, we then help them. So in that way, we can do it. In this period, we also then said, okay, so management measures quality, is that adequate? We brought in an internal but independent quality assessment, which links to internal audit, same way as internal audit monitors independently our other aspect of governance and finance, the same way we said we needed an independent unit. So in that 2009-12 period, we also set that up. So this is how we've grown. And the question then is, from 2012, next one, where do we go to? What do we do? And that's what this plan is about. We're saying that the key thing now that everyone's talking about is sustainability. If we've done this, if we say we're a high-performing organization, can we sustain it? Well, we don't have a choice. We have to sustain it. And so what are the key elements to sustaining the work we've done, as well as growing to the extent we can, within available resources? Within the period, in the next few years, we have recession. We don't have any more additional funds. In fact, one of the challenges we had in this 2012 year is the extent of cut we've had. And so in that context, what do we do? How do we still see how we can reach more people at the same time ensure the level of performance we have is growing, and also the issues of quality, our people focus, etc. continues. So this is what says that in this next period, what we want to still do then is to look at how we can enhance and expand new forms of legal aid access, which means we have justice people come to us. Is there another way we can reach our clients? Can we go out communities more? How do we look at what kinds of new access we can have? Like we did with the call center. People don't have to then travel anywhere. They can call us, get the first level advice. Then if it's a legal matter linked to our justices, what new ways can we link people? Client focus legal aid, we talked about continuing that focus. Quality rights-based legal aid service. So looking at the issues of quality, but also linking it back to our constitution and the issue of our rights. And then proactively making the justice system work. We've been part of the justice system. We believe that as one of the stronger players in the justice system in terms of performance, that we can help and work with others to also ensure that the justice system works better. So not just be a recipient of what happens in the justice system, but work with it. And then, as I said, brand is important so that people are aware of us, they know how to access us. Sustainability is the key word, as I said, financial and non-financial. So the way in which we work, the way in which we have our policies and procedures, are those sustainable? Will they help us to get through what we need to and deliver year on year over the next few years? And linking to that, internally looking at issues of talent management, which links to competencies of our staff, growing that, ensuring that we can recruit and retain staff by what we call employee value propositions, which is looking at what we offer to employees and what employees can offer to us and how we have the partnership. Building values-based authentic leadership, so leaders who can take this organization forward in the next decade, and then ensuring that we also use the technology and the technological advances to improve our services and to reach many more people. And that's essentially the big shift that we talk about in this next period. I hope that wasn't so boring, Honorable JJ. Not impressed.
No.
Okay, so having got this, you see that there's some details on the strategic shifts which we look at per component. I won't go into that, which says even more about what I've been talking about. But then we look at, okay, so now that we've got a vision and a mission, we've identified the values that will be guiding us in terms of how we do our work. What are some of the key risks? And that's where we move to strategic risks. What are the key risks that will impact on our work? Which risks we have to mitigate so that they don't then prevent us from achieving our goals? And these are the risks we spelled out in terms of each of the components, again, client and community, legal and justice, finance and governance, and employee and organizational capacity. And they are 10 risks. These are high-level risks. Then we also have more detailed risks at an operational level, which we won't go into in this track, but which our managers have to ensure that they understand, and that's included in our risk management plan. So those risks link to the issues, just go back on, the challenges to the rule of law at the community level. So do people turn to law to resolve the issues to the courts, or are they taking law into their own hands? We've got to building democracy, we've got to ensure that system of law and order works. Looking at capacity to meet community demands for civil legal aid, as we said, it's a big gap. Quality of services, whereas we think we're doing a lot in quality, it always will remain a risk, and that's why we have to manage the risk. The image, then lack of confidence in the justice system, again linking back to issues of where the system doesn't work for ordinary people, and what do they do about it. Issues of governance, government's ability to maintain our funding, but also the issue of sustainable performance on our side. And then in terms of employee organization, the tracking and retention of skills, the IT issues, as well as deepening client-focused values-based culture. So those are some of the risks which we will be mindful of in looking at this plan, but also in looking at how we execute the strategies we set up. That and the vision has then informed the outcomes and objectives. We have two high-level outcomes. That's one is externally focused, one is internally focused. External focus is simple quality justice for all, focusing on the poor and vulnerable, because that's our mandate. But in terms of the internal, to be a respected, high-performance, sustainable, accessible public entity impacting positively on society. So we don't want to just be another entity that's doing something. We want to impact positively on people's lives. And that then gets detailed into a few more objectives, which is listed again per component, and those objectives again talk to externally to the issues of empowered clients and communities making informed choices about the legal rights, about their legal rights and responsibilities. All the poor and vulnerable persons able to access quality public funded legal services to protect and defend their rights, an accessible, effective and efficient justice system serving all in South Africa. Effective, sustained stakeholder partnerships, so linking to other stakeholders able to jointly increase access to justice. And then in terms of the shareholder, is basically Parliament and the Ministry is delivering on our constitutional and statutory state shareholder mandate in an independent, accountable and sustainable manner. In terms of finances, we want to achieve financial and non-financial sustainability. We want to ensure good governance remains, and we want to build our brand further. In terms of our business processes, we want to ensure that we have delivery and business processes that are client-focused, but also are efficient and effective and sustainable. We want to have an effective and efficient economic and environmentally responsible supply chain management system, supporting our legal services delivery and internal processes. We want our management information to be accurate, reliable and timely so it can inform our work. We want at an employee level to have an expanded footprint That is where we can, that is in terms of, sorry, the organizational capacity, where we can reach, again, our the people we have to serve. We have to have committed, competent, and dedicated employees empowered to deliver organizational mandates and strategies. And then the others linked to a learning organization and knowledge management, organized based on culture, where our culture is clear to our employees, so we all work in terms of that. As I explained, the employee value proposition, which then is able to recruit and retain the best talent, and then values-based leadership that can lead this organization. That then, how is it going to happen? And that's where the strategies are what we're going to do to make and achieve those outcomes and objectives. And we have 26 strategies. I'm not going to read those strategies because they're in front of you. But I think the important ones are the client ones, because those are the external ones. And there you can see that we then go into further detail where we focus on criminal as well as civil as well as primary legal aid. We also focus on impact services and then new and alternative ways of delivering access to justice, which is ADR and other things, but also then the effective functioning of the justice system, the stakeholder partnerships, and then being accountable to government. So in terms of the strategies, those are the strategies that we will have, and in each component we have other strategies which talk to those outcomes, and that then brings us to the last section of our strategic plan, which is our program. So you'll see that, again, all of those things carry through. For each of our outcomes and objectives, we list the objectives, we link the strategy that talks to that, and then we link the programs that talk to it. So then again, you can see the integration, you can see how it's going to happen. Again, there's the number of programs is such that I don't have to read all of them. It's 58 programs. Those programs then get translated into even more projects. So in our organization, we have the different people, they know what they've got to do in relation to these projects, and they have to make it happen. The next section, the annual performance plan, what it shows is how then also our budget links to it, and you'll see if you just move on to the next slide. So the programs are not listing because in the annual performance plan they'll talk about a few of our programs, but yeah, stop there. If you look at the components of our balance scorecard, what we've then done is in terms of our budget, linked it to our programs, and what this does is it shows you where the money is going in legal aid. So 68% of our budget goes towards our first component, which is about our delivery client, community, stakeholder, and shareholder. 1.7% to finance and sustainability, 1% to working with our internal business processes work, and 29.5% to employee and organizational capacity. And that links to also our support staff. Our legal staff, we counted in the first program. Our support staff, we counted in the last program. But it would also then include things like training and other work related to that. So that is where you can see the integration following through. Our next people, which is Brian and Jerry, will talk to you about this annual performance plan and show you how that gets further linked to then our KPIs, etc. So, I think, Chairman, I'm not sure if you want us to take questions on each section or let's do all and then take questions.
Okay.
So then I'll hand over to the next person.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll talk to the client and community section of the annual performance plan. It's on slide 36. As you can see, the objectives are listed on top. We're talking to strategy one, delivering client-focused legal aid, including the vulnerable groups and criminal matters. There's quite a few programs that are linked to this strategy. Program one is to deliver quality criminal services. And you noted that there's two projects linked to this particular program. Project one is criminal court coverage, and the next one is reducing case backlogs. Criminal court coverage. Just to go over the different columns so one gets an understanding of how the ADP is set up. We look at our KPIs in terms of what we want to measure. In terms of criminal court coverage, we're looking at access to justice to the indigent. And we look at the base year information. This was the 2011 information. Our coverage of criminal courts at the moment at the district court level is 83%, regional court is 96%, and whereas in the I court we cover all matters that require legal aid. The target we're setting for ourselves for this financial year is district courts we'd like to move to about 85%, regional courts we'd like to have 100% coverage, and continue with our full coverage for the I courts. So the output for the year for criminal court coverage is to ensure that all criminal courts are covered, hopefully at the levels that we set ourselves. The potential risk that we have in this particular project is that there may be clients that are not represented if we don't actually give them the coverage. And we have a proof of delivery that the Auditor General will look at the end of the financial year, and that is our coverage plans, and as well as how we actually staff and practitioners at each court. Chair, I'm not going to go over every project in this time because it will be quite time consuming. So each strategy I'll pick up a few. So for this slide, this one other one is the reducing case backlogs. This is where we're having some challenges at the moment. As you can see, our ratio information, 16% of our matters in the district courts are exceeding the turnaround time that has been set for district courts, which is 6 months from the time of enrollment at the court. And our target for it is less than 20, so we're doing fine in the district courts. Whereas in the regional court and high courts, our current performance is not in keeping with the targets that we've got. So this is an area where we, together with other stakeholders, because they have an interest, they play a more significant role in this, we need to concentrate and ensure that we reduce. If we move to the next slide. Strategy 2 now, this is talking more to criminal legal aid. Both Judge and Bill spoke about this. Increasing civil legal aid is an important project for us under Program 4. And the year that has just passed, this year it was 2011, was 31,000. We're pleased that we have grown in the last financial year. And we aim to go by 10% each year going forward in the strat planning period. Obviously it will depend on the numbers of staff also increasing proportionally. Moving to slide 38, strategy 3, and that is focusing on primary legal aid services. Two important projects for us would be legal advice capacity. We have a big general advice component at all our justice centers and satellite offices. We aim to grow each year by at least 5%. In the base year information, we did 234,000 consults during the year. The last year that has grown also, and we intend to continue to grow with it. The increasing project is the next one, project for Program 7, and that is the call center. We'd like to inform the committee that program is now institutionalized. The call center is operating excellently. Our call volumes have grown to just under 50,000 in the last financial year. Moving to strategy 4, delivery line focused impact legal aid services. Again, it's another unit of ours that is doing excellent work. You can see our targets for the year. In the last financial year, we managed to approve 23 new matters, and we have a good success rate in the impact litigation unit presently. So moving on to slide 40. Strategy 6, contributing to an effective functioning of the justice system. An important program for us is project number 12, improved case flow management. We ensure that all our justice centers participate effectively at all local case flow meetings, and we're quite confident that this is the way in which the efficiency at the local level can be improved, and we play our role to ensure that we participate very actively, and we ensure that continuously at all regions we monitor what discussions are taking place at each of those meetings. The next slide, 41, linking to strategy 7, implementing community education and outreach programs. We've got a project 15 dealing with community outreach on constitutional rights. This links to our outreach programs at each of our justice centers plans on a quarterly basis to ensure that local communities are informed about their rights as well as legal aid services that are available to them. Strategy, moving on to the next page, 42, program 18, dealing with supporting other countries in terms of legal aid. Judge mentioned this also in his input, project 18. Pleased to say that we have hosted many delegations, including in the last financial year, 16 delegations, of which 8 was from Africa. So we are playing a role in ensuring that we are sharing our knowledge with the continent. Okay, Jerry will take us through the next few components. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. Starting from slide 43, the emphasis that we will be looking at going forward will be in complementing what the CEO said earlier, in particular from slide 12 and 13, where she was talking about finances, sustainability, internal business processes and organizational capacity and employment related issues. I would only mention and emphasize issues that would complement what has already been said with much more focus of what our intentions are. The outline in essence of our approach of our template has already been indicated by Brian. And starting with slide number 43, slide 43 indicates our intention in as far as how we approach performance, financial performance and monetary maturity levels of our finances. And in this regard, our emphasis in that slide is to show that we want to be proactive, predictable, and also have our finances being measurable. Currently, as stands, we are confident that we are compliant in terms of meeting what is expected of us in speeding down strategic imperatives on budgeting. And in terms of financial reporting, we are timely, and we continue to engage the National Treasury and the Department of Justice in as far as our financial resources are concerned. Slide number 44. Our philosophy in terms of how we would deal with non-financial related performance touches firstly on integration of reporting. The ethos of best practice currently is that if you integrate your reporting, it provides to you an integrated viewpoint of an organizational performance, and that is the approach that we are following. And we follow the same route in terms of integrating our policies, corporate policies, and for that very reason, in each of our related policies, we are now consolidating them so that they project to any interested party a combined perspective. And lastly on that, we have started to intensify on reviewing identified risk, and this goes to process risk, that goes to human capacity risk, that goes to other aspects of our business that would need to be monitored time and again. The essence and focus thereof is to make sure that our choices have direct and effective outcomes in as far as advancing our business forward. Slide number 45 talks much more about how we will deal with governance, and our governance approach in this regard is premised firstly on the fact that we are guided by statutory guidelines that are there, adding it up to the King III guidelines, for instance. The PMA, of course, a public entity, is one element that is critical for us to follow through. And we have the support of our board, which ultimately guide us and in terms of taking our business forward. When we go to slide 46, which is a continuation of slide 45, in there we want to indicate to say that in terms of making sure that what we offer to the public outside there is authentic, we are focusing now on combined assurance. What it simply means is that in as far as what management presents to you today, in terms of what we intend to perform for the next period of time, our performance is being monitored in terms of whether we are attaining what we have set forth, and also in terms of whether we have met the prerequisite in as far as statutory requirements are concerned. And our internal audit gets in to make sure that our quality are in par with best practice and in the standard that we have set for ourselves. And in getting the auditor general to come and audit us, we then get an assurance as far as we have done the best that we said we would do without any faltering. So a combined assurance would come from management, internal audit, and external auditors. That is our approach on that. Slide number 47 talks much more about what the CEO talked about, the mixed model approach, which has been an adopted approach to service delivery to of legal aid to our clients. by use of our in-house practitioners, which takes a greater portion of how we deliver our services. And in that, of course, we would have judicial practitioners who are private law firms and individuals, and we would have cooperatives in as far as it relates to areas where we do not have a sufficient reach. In that, what we are indicating is that we would, in the next period of time, intensify our alternative means of delivering services as a means of internal business processes. And for that very matter, we would become much more client-focused in terms of our models and in making sure that access and availability of our services is reaching our stakeholders, and much more than that, that it becomes simple and relevant to our clientele base, because we're dealing with a clientele base which is of another level in society. Slide number 48, still on internal business processes. In here, what we just indicate is that we would continue, given our mandate, which is premised on the Legal Aid Act, continue to formulate our policy and our standard operating practices around best practices. And as a matter of practice, this organization follow where relevant standardized practices which assist in clarifying business processes and also tries to build confidence in our staff for them to be sure of what to do and when to do things. And in addition to that, in that slide we are indicating that in our supply chain management, we try by all means and will continue to do that to make sure that our supply chain management are equitable in terms of provision of service and acquisition of goods and services. And the next slide, 49, is talking still in internal business processes, and in that we are emphasizing accountability, knowledge management, and efficiencies. And in that you can, as an outside party, you can see it much more better from the way that we present our performance, be in print media or electronically. We are accessible also in terms of our website, for instance. Slide number 15, starting with employee and organizational program, the strategy. About 2,500 of our staff spread out throughout the whole country. 80% is about is our legal staff, and in that we want to indicate that we are spread throughout the country. And the CEO has already identified and indicated that we have 64 justice centers, 64 satellite offices, 6 regional offices. And in that we still want to pursue to which areas that we would like to cover. We are quite aware that it will not be possible to read them over time. For that very matter, we are indicating that strategic alliances like private lawyers would become much more important for us. That is why pro bono agreements are important for business for ourselves. We will continue to capacitate our in-house practitioners so that they are able to deliver service at different levels of our costs in the country. Slide number 51. Businesses succeed because of people who perform. And we take serious the point that we are human capital intensive and our people are our assets, and mentorship is an essence of focus and coaching, and that is why as a matter of focus we still have candidate attorneys which will grow within our business and become competitive lawyers in the legal fraternity. And we also have a program of training, both for legal training and for other support training. And in terms of advancing ourselves as an organization, we know that we are operating within the international sphere. We continue to do research work, and in this case we would be setting up, we have already set up our annual research work for the year and we'll be going through it. Slide number 52. I will not reiterate, the CEO has already touched a number of the issues raised. And also slide number 53. Slide number 54, it emphasizes the issue about what we can offer and attract potential employees and make sure that we don't lose the employees that we have already have in the organization. And for that very matter, we continue to review our value proposition to staff and potential staff. In that case, in realization of the fact that we have a number of our staff spread out throughout the country, we have, for the third year now, intensified our leadership program. And in that case, we are trying to make our best that we have commonality in understanding what are the ethos of values that we stand for as an organization, and we continue along those lines. The last slide, talking about what makes business relevant in the current modern era that we live in. We have an IT network which is spread out throughout the country, and we continue to make sure that it's up to speed in terms of best practices. We will continue to make it to be relevant in terms of client-focused services. Thank you.
Chairperson. Okay, with regard to the budget, I'll highlight on the following. The government grant allocations over the MTF period, the key assumptions that were used when preparing the budget, the balance scorecard as they were presented by my colleagues, the COO and the NOE, and how they relate to the funding. We also explain on the variances and highlight the key financial challenges facing the organization, the performance of Legal Aid South Africa in this financial year, and also the explanation for the financial year that we've just concluded, 2011-12, presenting the unaudited figures as the audit is currently underway. When preparing the budget, we took into account the strategic plan 2012-2017. We also took into account the business plan for the financial year under review 2011-2012. In presenting the budget, we had to take into account the 34 million cut that was effected by National Treasury as a result of efficiency savings that took place throughout the country, and the OSD phase 1 shortfall of 30 million that had to be funded from our baseline allocation, which was not provided by the Department of Justice. We also considered the year-on-year increases as the National Treasury guidelines and the inflation at the time of preparing the budget. We took into account the financial sustainability of the organization, having stabilized the organization from over the 10-year period that the CEO highlighted. We are now focusing on sustainability issues to be able to enable us to be able to do more with less. We also took into account the proportion of the direct services delivery costs. This is now the core expenses involved in delivering our services as opposed to the support costs involved. With the government grant allocations over the MTF period, we received additional new funding of 20 million during the financial year 2011-2012, giving us a total government grant of 1.3 billion. For the 2012-13 financial year, we had a total grant of 1.2 billion. This includes the 20 million new funding and also the budget cut of the 4 million as a result of efficiency savings and also the 30 million cut OSD funding referred to. For 2013-14, we will be receiving 1.3 billion and 1.3 billion also for 2014-15. This would be for moving from 2013-14 to 2014-15, it's an inflation increase of 6%. This will be also for the financial year under review. Okay, looking at the MTF for 2012-15 again, you will note that the bulk of our budget goes to salaries and related costs, being a service-oriented organization where we rely on our people to be able to perform our work. And 32 million for the financial year 12-13. Operating costs to support us to be able to do our work is 205 million, followed by a capex of 23 million. You will note that for the operating expenditure, there's actually a decrease. This was in order to be able to cater for the budget cuts as mentioned earlier. For the looking at the movement between 2012-2013, you'll note there's an increase of 12.5% in salaries. This is after taking into account the year-on-year inflation increase. The PPI increased at an average of 1.5%, and the recruitment rate having dropped to 96.8% in order to cater for the budget cuts. And also this amount includes 14.4 million for vulnerable groups. This allocation earmarked funding for children's matters. The case, the clock has increased by a nominal 6% year on year. Direct expenditure reflects 14% decrease. Direct expenditure would include funding for external practitioners, that is judicare, cooperative agreements, impact litigation. There we're showing a decline of 14% because in the previous financial year, 2011-12, any savings that were generated from vacant positions, they were transferred to direct expenditure in the key service delivery. Okay, and operating expenditure mentioned earlier, which there's a 0% increase. There is that is to cater for the cuts where we didn't increase any of the operating expenditure except for escalations where we obliged in terms of our contractual obligations to cater for those increases. Okay, and then there's a nominal increase on capital expenditure. Mentioned earlier on, the salary recruitment budget reduced to 96.8% in order to cater for the cuts, and also a further reduction of 34 million for already funds from our baseline allocation having not provided by the DOJ, and the contractual obligations, they were linked to contractual escalations in terms of the agreements. With the link from the strategic plan to the annual performance plan, the business plan, and also our individual performance contract, we then also allocated the budget in terms of the balance scorecard. The first component of the balance scorecard, being the client and community and stakeholder shareholder, takes about 68% of the total budget. This is where we have allocated salaries for our practitioners, those that are directly employed by ourselves. In this budget component, we also cater for the duty care and also for funding allocated to vulnerable groups, that is for children's matters. And also impact litigation has been allocated 7 million, you know, to deliver client-focused impact legal aid services. Included in the 872 million is the 32 million ring fence for case backlog. Okay, moving on to the second component of the balance scorecard, we've got the finance and sustainability. In this component, we make provision for services that will ensure the achievement of finance sustainability and also for maintaining good governance. These are all the costs that would be incurred by the internal audit department in helping us achieving good governance, and also 4 million for strengthening or supporting the legal aid rent. Okay. In business processes, as you have noted, not all strategies can be directly linked to the budget. Some of the strategies achieved through taken out of other strategies. Okay. In the business process balance scorecard, then we've also allocated about 6 million to ensure the maintenance of strong financial management and also process involved in the supply chain management processes. And also the reliable and timely management information systems. Under employee and organizational capacity, we've catered for all the support staff. This is our salaries for non-legal personnel. These are salaries for people that are supporting the delivery of our direct legal services. So about 283 relate to salary for the support staff. And also other additional programs, which include the IT platform, that they would have all the supporting costs, such as our cost for the VPN, for the WAN, wide area network, and local area network. So any other additional costs that are in support of the delivery of legal aid services. Okay, as mentioned earlier on, 72% of our budget relates to salaries. And 70% of our staff are lawyers, legal practitioners. Direct expenditure constitutes 7.5% of their budget. That includes 78 million for GDK, 8 million for co-ops, and also 7 million for impact mitigation. Operating costs would constitute about 16% of our budget. They include basically office rental, municipal services, vehicle fuel, wide area network. These are just some of the material expenditure that we incurred to support the delivery of legal services, while 1.8% of our budget relates to capital expenditure. That would be our computer hardware, furniture, and motor vehicles. Overall, the budget increased by 8% year on year from 2011-12 to 2012-13. The higher increase is mainly due to the implementation of legislation for vulnerable groups, which was not received in 2011-12, but it will be included in the financial year 2012-13. Okay, and the overall increase, excluding the case backlog, is 5%. Now, moving on to the finance and sustainability challenges facing Legal Aid South Africa. The budget cut of 34 million has been posing some challenges to Legal Aid SA, in that we had to not increase any operating costs. You know, taking into account the already tight budget of our organization, this will definitely pose as a challenge. Because we were only able to increase the contractual obligation because we didn't have any choice there. And this also had an impact in terms of our recruitment budget, in that we had to reduce the recruitment budget to now just below 97%, 96.8%. Okay. And at all our engagements with stakeholders during the strategic planning process, the main concern raised was the level of service delivery. That is, we require more practitioners in court for criminal and civil work. So we need to improve on our practitioner per court ratio. So with the current funding, our level of coverage is inadequate and does not provide any relief staff. The government grants macro increase of 6% also poses a challenge in that the actual annual salary adjustments are more often than not higher than the macro increase, which means that Legal Aid South Africa needs to find funding to fund the within its present allocation to fund the difference. Also, contractual obligations that are on average about 12%, which is 6% higher than the macro increase, also holds as a challenge. You know, this is resulting in negative growth in real terms on our overall budget. Moving on to financial performance for the year that has gone past, the unaudited figures for 2011-12 indicate that 99.8% of the budget was spent and committed as at year end. This has been the trend for the past 8 years, where we spend more than 99% of our budget. We've had 10 unqualified audit reports in succession. We had our unqualified audit report, no matters of emphasis, over the past 6 years in succession, that all Auditor General's recommendations have been implemented within the agreed time frames, say a month after the audit had been finalized. Okay. This is again just a summary of the balance scorecard expenditure, taking into account the budget and the expenditure in case unaudited. So overall we've spent 99.8% of the budget, where on almost all Blasco had budgets, the full budget was actually spent and committed. Okay, I will then now hand over to the chairperson.
Thank you very much, Rebecca. Chair, just to conclude, from my side, our side, I think what is very clear from our strategic plan is that we want to build on our high performance built over the years. And the focus of the strategic plan is to ensure that we increase the maturity of the organization in terms of doing things and to sustain our high performance in all areas. I think you've heard from the CEO and the NOE and COO that sustainability is a key word in terms of everything we do. In our strategic plan, we also want to employ new ways of delivering legal services. We always looking for new and effective ways of delivering legal services, which is what we do. And we want to also continue taking advantage of technology. You heard mention of IT platform growing and stuff. So we want to make sure that we incorporate the advances in technology into our business processes. And we want to continue building the collective competency of the organization with a focus on quality legal services delivery. So, Chairperson, that's in a nutshell our strategic planning, and I want to take the opportunity to thank the committee for giving us this opportunity to present. It is always an engagement we look forward to, because we hear of issues where there are gaps in what we do and we go back and we implement. So, Chairperson, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Judge Mlambo, and the rest of your team. Okay, questions and comments, Mr. Jeffries, followed by Ms. Smuts, followed by Chana Majeke, followed by Debbie Schaefer. Go.
No.
One of the sharpest talk. In that order, please, Mr. Jeffries.
Thanks. And thanks for the presentation. I mean, Legal Aid South Africa always gives good presentations. We like things like unqualified audits, and we don't have to ask you about how you're going to respond to things that the Auditor General raised. And generally, no, I mean, there's not. I mean, I was joking a little bit earlier about Lars's presentation being less interesting than some of the others. There was another body that we used to like as well, but then unfortunately they came and brought the same presentation that they brought last year. So that changed that a bit. But you don't seem to have done that. I think the report is very good, and what you're doing is very good. I think, though, to be fair to Legal Aid South Africa, we need to do more as far as oversight and monitoring. So we need to get out more and see what is happening on the ground, because even the level that is here, you're not necessarily entirely aware of what's happening on the ground. And Chair, I think that's something we need to do. But maybe just some questions. The issue of the cooperation agreements. Can you just tell us a bit more about that? Maybe these are more annual report things that I should wait till the end of the year, but it does sort of form part of the budget. There is a budgeted figure for cooperation agreements, which is more this year than last year, and then there's a